got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA.
Nerd rage. Nerd rage.
Now here are the nerds.
Happy Nerds Day, everybody. Yes, it's me, Darth Monger. We are coming to you from the Aloe Fiber Studios in downtown Greeley. And Nick is going to be on assignment for the first half of our show today, but he will be back joining us. But you've got me, you've got Micah behind the glass, and then coming in late, can't say that we're not surprised by that, is Nick Kenny, also known as Darthus Binkus.
You know, if he's not in studio, he's going by Darthus Binkus.
Yeah, that's fine. I was expecting you to give us the whole lead in with all of them. So,
oh, okay.
That's what I was
Darth
expecting.
Darth Monger. Darth Ambivalous.
Darth Harmonic.
Yeah, the Darthus Binkus just completely threw me. I'm sorry about that.
That's my favorite.
Sorry, folks. I know it is your favorite. So, well, I am really excited because we are actually joined in studio today, but with Ryan Ulp. And one of the taglines we were talking about that we haven't done a really good job on as of late is all the things nerd, which is, you know, comics and games. And
Where have the games been?
We did some Pokemon cards recently, and that's a little bit comic, a little bit card, but we're doing games today. So Ryan Ulp, right? I have
Ulp.
That right?
Ulp is Ulp. Right. OPP.
OPP.
Yeah, you know me. OPP.
Oh my gosh, you're going to have to take us out with that song, Micah, at the end of the segment. That is great. But we've got Ryan in studio. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, Darth.
Cool.
How do you join the Darth Club or the Dark Side?
Apparently, Micah has to give you a moniker because he can't say your last name, and then it just goes from there. So.
Can I be Darth Mo? Micah.
Yes, you can be Darth Mo.
Darth Mo. All right, I like that. Cool. You know, you're gonna have to get your whole, you know, dark side backstory. We're gonna have to figure out what, you know, what got you there.
Sure.
Those whole things. But yeah, so we want to talk about games today. So Ryan, we've got you in studio, and from what we understand, you're a little bit of an expert when it comes to games, especially board games, card games. So
yeah, thanks.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Expert's a great way to say obsession, isn't it?
It is. But subject matter expert. That's the phrase we use.
That's right.
Yes.
I mean, it could be drugs. That's what I always say.
No.
And I'm always in the nerd store is like I'm blowing my paycheck again. But yeah. So I love board games and card games and things where we play in person. Although, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of sites for digital play popped up with real people. You know, they've got AIs you can play against, but it's still always better to play a real person. And, you know, I attend between 1 and 3 game nights a week and really enjoy that. I also try to design some of my own games and I go to cons. I've been to board game conventions. My last one was 2 weeks ago, SaltCon in Salt Lake City.
Nice.
That was a good time. I hadn't been to that one before. I was threw my badge from there in with all the other badges, and there's like 30 to 40 of them in the box now. So I've been to a lot of conventions to go check out the newest board games.
Nice. So what is it about board games that you really enjoy? What just draws you in and gets you coming back for more?
I think the couple of the main features of a board game is it's competitive, and a lot of people like really like the feel of winning, or that they feel they did their best even if they didn't win. And a second aspect that you'll find in the video game sector as well is being able to be someone that you can't be 100% of the time. You play a video game so that you can be an alien fighting, you know, crowbar wielding, awesome guy, scientist guy. You're thinking Half-Life, right?
Yeah.
But you know, you can ski amazing jumps and stuff that you can't normally do. And so, you know, in a board game, same type of thing. You get to be a wizard. You get to be a fairy. You get to be a, you know, something. Unless the game's super abstract, you know, there's usually some sort of characterization of the player. And so I think between competition and also not just a character you can be, but also a persona, a thing you can't normally do. So I play with kids a lot. And kids, most of these kids attend like my sister's church and stuff on Sundays at the Boomer House here. It's particularly a kid day. And they're all good little kids that aren't supposed to lie to each other, to their friends, to their parents. And I'll bring out a social deduction game, and they need to hide their allegiance, and the game makes them lie. And some of them are super good at it, and they love that for 20 minutes they get to be a compulsive liar. They get to do things that they're not normally allowed to do.
You know, I was going to ask you about that because I've been to the Boomer House a few times, and it's a great setup and a great environment for you to go in and do the board games. I mean, they've got tons of games, and it's just designed for that. And it's probably not something that we would have seen as a thriving business 10 years ago. It just seems like that there's, and maybe COVID had something to do with creating this sense of togetherness that people were sort of forced to be together. And so they figured out and they started to redevelop their love and their affection for board games. What do you think?
10 years is probably about right for that business model. We call that in general Board Game Cafe. Now, it coming to Greeley this soon, I mean, there's already a few in Fort Collins, Denver, the bigger cities. You know, you can go find some board game cafes. I'm really happy we've got one in Greeley now. It's probably the new business model type of thing, just like, you know, the Blockbuster eventually had to die in Hastings and things like that just because everything was coming in digital and stuff. And there's something like 8,000 new board games coming out every year. And I love the Nerd Store and that they have a lot of games. But, you know, to keep people coming in, you got to have a play area sometimes besides just the purchasing selection. And so these – they don't actually sell any games at the Boomer House.
Right.
They only sell to keep the doors open, mm-hmm. beer and wine and chips and a little admission charge. But to be able to go in and play their library of – I think they got 400 or 500 games on the shelves that you can just pull anyone off, play it with your friends, or mm-hmm. have somebody teach it to you, make new friends, put it back on the shelf, be there all evening. It's a great way to spend an evening. It's
absolutely is. And for those that don't know, you should know that Blockbuster was given the opportunity to buy Netflix early on, and they chose not to because they thought it was a fad. And we know how that went.
I think they laughed the opportunity out of the room.
I think that could be true. But I'm hoping maybe at some point in time before the end of the summer, I will get my chance to be close enough that I can go visit the very last one in Oregon.
I believe they sell beer.
I don't know if they do.
See,
but you
see
can,
every place, as soon as you start selling beer, then you've added so much life expectancy to your company.
And it definitely went up.
Where is the beer here? Well, we're interviewing, right?
We're getting that up. So, well, you know, Micah can't drink it because it's against FCC rules. But had I known that you were a beer drinker, then I would have brought some in. So, you know, if you would have tuned in yesterday to Brew Talk, we would have been talking about beer, you could have known all about that. But
cool.
We'll see there. And I'm sorry for missing that, folks. But so want to ask you, I got a couple questions I really want to ask, but the first one I ask, what's your favorite board game?
You know, that's it fluctuates very often. I can give you maybe a top five at any given time, and then another one might bump something out, and then I'll have some nostalgia and bring it back up. So right now, let me throw out.
Give me your top five then.
Let me give you, like a great party game, Avalon. The Resistance Avalon is always a great one. Let's go Scythe. That's kind of a fun dudes on a map, fight each other with giant mechs game. Let's go Century Spice Road is just, to me, the perfect little set collection game and engine building. Let's just do those three for now.
Okay.
You know, because I know I've been talking long on other things, so there you go.
No. I think it's great. And, you know, I'm kind of an old school homer. I think I'm the oldest person in the building, which is usually the case. But for me, I always loved Risk. That was such a great strategy, fun game that I enjoyed. And it was one of those that, you know, Monopoly is always great and people have fun playing that. And those are kind of those classic. But I love the newer ones that have come out, you know, Settlers of Catan and some of those other things that you do more of that world building, and that's great. And so so then the other question I really wanted to ask you about is you've got this game with you, this card game it looks like, and it says Reflections on it. So talk to me about that. What do you got there?
So this is my game, Reflections in the Looking Glass. Is the name. I'm holding a review copy because only 10 of those exist right now. And I've got this game on Kickstarter. It's Alice in Wonderland themed. We've got some wonderful art by a guy from the Philippines named Will Dagitoy. And we, you know, Alice in Wonderland is in the public domain, being like 150 years since it was published or something. But the Disney movie version, of course, is not. So we've got a different take on all the characters, and they're I think they came out really well. You know, our Tweedles are kind of some thugs. And we got a big old Jabberwocky and a real sad Mock Turtle, which are only like book characters and stuff.
Yeah, this is definitely not your Disney's Queen of Hearts.
No, no.
I'm just going to say that right off the bat.
Far nicer to the Queen of Hearts. The book doesn't actually have her being quite the loud, fat, angry Karen that she is.
Yeah, that is definitely not her. So.
She is definitely imposing and does want to cut people's heads off.
Oh, yeah.
But she, her silence is just as intimidating as her voice when she is loud, too.
So. All right, so what so how does this game work?
So it's a two-player little duel. You'll set the cards up in one of five patterns that you'll randomly deal. And they're overlapping. It's got kind of a Mahjong vibe to it when you do this. But there's two sides to the Mahjong thing. And so then when these cards are overlapping, you have the choice of anything that is completely uncovered. And then the opponent will get the reflection. That's, you know, kind of bring the theme back in the title. Mm-hmm. So if you take this Mock Turtle, I get this Queen of Hearts. And if you take this Dodo, I get this one. So on every turn, you're both getting cards that you want and also the card that the other person doesn't want. You'll have 18 cards in front of you at the end of the game. And then there's this really punishing scoring system. That there's positives and negatives. So if you're going for and negative scores aren't bad, you just want to be the furthest from zero. So you just got to commit and not have conflicts. So if you have you combine all of your people of the same type. So
and it's like day and night is what I'm seeing, kind of the theme there. Okay.
So if I have these in my score pile, this one's -2 and this one's -1 because a set of two equal sun characters is -2 and a single moon character is -1. You always have to bring all the characters you collect because there's four of every one together. And so you would want to not have conflicts, but you can see, you know, so these would all be going negative and I'd have a -5 from zero. But if I had these, then this would be a +2 going the wrong way. So this checkerboard pattern of the minuses and pluses is particularly punishing. And the thing that it's not just about the cards you want that you take, but also the cards the other person sends you that makes this tough. So it's kind of strategic in that way. And there is now a digital implementation online, and people have been like, whoa, this is thinky. So I've gotten hundreds of people to play this, and it has gone over well. So,
we're running up against our commercial, but you said it's on Kickstarter. So how do people find you? How do they help? How do they contribute? How do they become a part of this?
The Kickstarter link is very long and you wouldn't remember it, but you can go to Kickstarter and search Reflections in the Looking Glass, or you can go to BoardGameGeek.com and do Reflections in the Looking Glass as well. And those will both send you links to where you can buy a copy for just $12. And that'll make this game a reality if we reach our funding goal.
That's fantastic. And we'll try and actually get that published on our social media so you guys can click on that and check that out. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about your card game and talking to us about games that we have not done a great job of covering on the Nerd Show as of late, but we're going to do that. So stick around after this segment. We're going to jump into The Mandalorian. Welcome back to the Nerd Show from the Aloe Fiber Studios in downtown Greeley. You have a full regimen now. Back, Darthus Pincus. I'm so sorry, Nick. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I deserve it for not being able to make it.
How dare you have obligations?
I know, but at least you're there on, you know, you're on the phone, so we appreciate that. But we literally have, we cannot wait to talk about The Mandalorian. I think it's chapter 19, season 3, episode 3, but was just fantastic. I loved it from start to finish.
Oh my gosh. I am so bummed we're not recording Wednesday because, I mean, I can't wait for the next episode.
I know.
Because this led to so much, like, whoa. I mean, right where we left off with Bo-Katan just kind of looking into, like, what did I just see? What I just experienced? And I'm curious of you guys' take of why she was asking Din if he saw anything.
I think that she was asking him because if he didn't see it, then she can ignore it. I don't think, because she talked about it was all full of myth and superstition. And so I really think that the idea that that myth and superstition that the old ways were kind of built on were real, not they weren't just, you know, falsehoods and they weren't made up fables, I think bothers her. And it's really going to question her whole foundation and philosophy. And I think she wants to ignore it.
I thought this, well, you know, we got through the rest of the episode, and I still was thinking, like, okay, the legend says that the original Mandalore, the ruler of Mandalore, rode on a mythosaur, or tamed a mythosaur.
Yeah, he befriended a mythosaur in the Living Waters, yep.
I have a feeling that she might try to go back and over time try to befriend this mythosaur to take claim of Mandalore, since she has no right to the throne, Darksaber.
It could be. I think that's very plausible. I see her as not being someone who wants to, like, get back into the old ways, because she said it multiple times over that she feels like that the old ways have caused all of the rifts and the problems and the challenges within the Mandalorian culture.
I'm curious. I part of me doesn't trust Bo.
Oh, no.
I don't. That's the only thing I can see of her. She wants the Darksaber.
Oh yeah,
but she can't get it. So how can she get it? Or I don't know. Take claim to the throne. It's anyway. I'm curious to see how Bo-Katan will unfold. But Dolly, we had a heck of a nice little chase with some ties once they got back to I can't remember the planet. Forgive me.
Oh, Calavera.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they got back to Calvera, they had the interceptors that came after them, and then they bombed her home, and she was really upset. And then we get like five squadrons of TIE interceptors, and she says something that I think is tipping the hand that we're going to see Thrawn before this season is out, when she said, "That's a lot of TIE fighters for an Imperial warlord."
Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen TIE interceptors like that since the struggling days of technology with the Return of the Jedi, then just kind of pop it up on screen. So it was awesome to see them in full battle. And even, you know, Moff Gideon didn't have any interceptors. He had TIE fighters.
Right.
In Andor, we haven't seen any TIE interceptors yet. So the only person who was really pushing them interceptors was Grand Admiral Thrawn during Rebels. Of course, they had some at the Battle of Endor, but I think it's very lucky that they belong to Thrawn, especially with how many there were. And there are hints that Rosario Dawson posted on Instagram last week saying that she's jonesing for this next episode.
Yeah.
We might get to see Thrawn. We might get to see Ahsoka. I'm just loving what they've done. So, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Then we had a cutaway. We got to go back to Coruscant, which we have yet to see in anything but Andor so far.
And I thought it was really funny, and I had to watch it multiple times to make sure I heard it right. And when G-68, the female officer that was on Moff Gideon's ship, says, "Yeah, not much has changed. They just took down the cogwheels." I loved how they were like, they called them the cogwheels. She called them the cogwheels. But yeah, and, you know, we see that at the end of, you know, Dr. Pershing's speech, and people like, you know, Empire, Republic, Rebellion, it's all the same to me. I just keep my head down. And so you see that, and that's really what happens in most of these cases, that the upper class tends to be oblivious to what's going on in these kind of, you know, these civil wars and these struggles, because they just don't get touched by it. And they're reinforcing that in this episode. And we see this, and we think that Dr. Pershing really wants to do something that's good, and he wants to continue his research. And, you know, G60A, and I can't remember her name. I know she introduces herself while they're on the Star Destroyer. She's playing both sides, man. She is a double agent.
Oh, absolutely. What was neat that he gave that same speech at the Opera House that Anakin and Palpatine were having the conversation about Darth Plagueis the Wise.
Yep.
So what a great tie-in there. And I like what they're doing here by setting up what we experience in Episode 8 on Canto Bite when they get the, helping them escape. And it's like,
DJ,
whose ship is this? Oh, yeah. It looks like they supply the bad guys. And the good, you know, that those wealthy people really do benefit from these wars. They don't care who's in charge because they're almost untouched.
Yeah.
Which is hurtful and sad. And gosh, I mean, you see getting to the falling apart of the New Republic. I mean, dismantling and talking about dismantling their fleet.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even know what's out in the outer rim and beyond. Even in the height of the old Republic and the Republic. So I just think that's so narrow-minded, thinking that, oh, if we dismantle our weapons, then everything's going to be okay. And it's, everyone's just timid and underlying just fear just buzzing about with what we know is going to happen.
Well, Nick, and you and I talked about this even off-air about how it helps build foundations of what happened in 7, 8, 9, and I've seen some stuff online where people are saying, oh, you know, Favreau and Filoni are going to retcon the sequels. I think they're actually doing things that reinforce what happened in the sequels, just to your point, when they talk about, well, they're dismantling the Rebel Alliance fleet. Well, by doing it, just like you said, it sets that up so that what happened in episodes 7, 8, 9 could actually happen, because they've just been so blinded by the fact that they are, you know, we're the New Republic, we're here to help, and everybody loves us, and we're just supporting everyone, and that there's more things going on than they're even aware of. And I think they're doing a great job of it. You know, the whole element of Pershing and him trying to do good, and them talking about, you know, the Mind Flayer and, you know, Gideon escaping before he got to the War Tribunal. I think there's a possibility that Gideon is still out there. We might see him back in this season, and that his officer is working both sides, and she's an operative undercover, and she's working for the Empire still. And so I think we've got some great stories that are going to come out, and we're going to continue to see build over the next several episodes.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I see her. We talked about, you know, what she was doing. I knew when she was sticking around, she's gonna do something awful to Pershing. And I didn't see it as she's eliminating his desire to help the Republic or to forget him. I think she's doing it to condition him to be just unequivocally supportive of the Empire and the First Order. Because when they're talking in Episode 9, when Palpatine has come back, you know, cloning, you know, things only the Sith knew. Well, no, the Kaminoans know it, but they're gone. This guy was really into DNA splicing, and I mean, that makes sense on how they could get Palpatine back. So I think they're not retconning, they're just reinforcing what people have just been skeptical about, because we didn't see it happening. It happened nowhere over 30 years, you know, so this is fun to get some of those fillers in there. But, I mean, we're just getting started with the unknown regions and Thrawn, and I it's just so exciting to be a Star Wars fan right now. And of all the great episodes Favreau and Filoni have written, I mean, so many of them they've been directly a part of, and Ahsoka's been in every single episode that Favreau has written. And he was Filoni's creation, so those two are brilliant.
Yeah, they're doing a great job with it, and I think that we are seeing an environment that is world-building, it's expanding, we're still continuing to see things. We saw that last week with the really interesting creature in the Mines of Mandalore that was going after him that, you know, some people said looked like a Bionicle, but it was different, it was unique, we hadn't seen that before. And we're seeing elements that continue to make this series kind of one of the to-watch series that's going on right now. We finished The Last of Us. Such a great series. So excited for season 2. Can't wait to see what's going to go on with that. And I'm just thrilled that we continue to see stuff that's going on with The Mandalorian. and it's going to be great. I just, if you're a Star Wars fan right now, you could not be happier. At least I don't think you could.
No, even Bad Batch is picking up and helping to set the tone for even more stuff. But gosh, I loved when we finally got back to them cleansing themselves and finally getting back into their cult. It's interesting to see what Bo-Katan's going to do. She can't take her helmet off anymore. Is she that type of person to do that? And we see how revered the living water is. So how quickly are they going to want to try to go back to Mandalore to resettle?
Well, and we definitely have a lot to talk about. We will make sure we talk about that next week. We're going to finish up this segment. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little Picard and then maybe some Bad Batch before the show is over. So stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's voice. It's kind of odd that you let in with Living After Midnight when we're going to talk about Picard, Micah.
Yes, yes.
I like how there's no argument, there's no reason, there's no rationale, just yes.
It's a good song.
It's a good song.
Nothing wrong with Priest.
I didn't say there was. It's not very Star Trek-ish.
It's a good song.
It's a good song. So are we five episodes into Picard?
Yes, five episodes in. And okay, I didn't complain last week. I didn't do a bonus segment. I was very upset. This week was better. It's getting better.
Yeah.
I haven't had to complain too much. I don't have a problem with Raffi and Worf. That's been going fine. I don't have too much of a problem with the overarching plot.
Yeah.
There are just certain character things that really get under my skin.
I know. And you and I talked about this off air that you were really upset with the way Riker was acting and he was not very Rikerish. But here's the thing. He has evolved. He had to work without Picard for a number of years in Starfleet. So the idea that they would fall back into their old Captain Number One kind of banter back and forth in that regard, I don't think was necessary. I liked that it was a little bit off, and I love the little nod that they did, not this week, but last week when they were like, you should start calling me Number One. I like that. I thought that it was good. And
yeah,
that
was good. That was kind of funny, but yeah. It's completely out of character for him to snap at Picard like that.
But again,
you can be firm with him. You can be firm with a man that you've respected your entire career, not like, I'm so angry at you that I'm going to act like a baby and tell you to get off my bridge.
See, I don't think he did that, but I think it's a role reversal for both of them, and that's what we were expected to see. That
get off the bridge, you've Riker, killed us all.
Riker now needed to be a little bit more assertive than he ever did with Number One in a different way, or as Number One. And so I was okay with it. I thought it worked. And granted, I am not a Star Trek, expert, so I'm not going to go into it. But from what I've seen from The Next Generation and everything else, I thought it worked and I thought it flowed.
I've been watching Star Trek longer than I've been a Broncos fan, and that's true.
That's just crazy talk.
I was introduced to Star Trek 3 years before I became a Broncos fan. So,
which tells you the level of commitment that Micah has to this franchise. So
this is, it's very, it was, right. When I was mad, I was mad. Now this episode has gotten better. They reintroduced the character Ro Laren, who, yep, she came in as Ensign Ro. She was a Bajoran who had joined Starfleet and then, mm-hmm, did something wrong, went to prison, then Picard got her out of prison for one, yep, mission. She did the mission well, and he said, okay, I will put my reputation
on the line for you,
which he did.
Yep.
And he got her on. She was a character who was on the bridge. She was in, yep, like 10 episodes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good storyline. Like, yeah, she became the first episode she was in, she was hated. People hated her, and she, I don't want to say she was a fan favorite. She was a favorite of mine, but she turned it around. And then at the end, it was one of the last episodes of The Next Generation. She decided to turn her back on Picard, on what he had done for her. And she said, I'm going to join the Maquis, which is a terrorist group.
Yep, she joined the Maquis, and she was supposed to be embedded with them. And then, so we see all of that coming in, and but I thought they did an amazing job of developing and creating the tension between neither one of them knowing if the other one was a changeling.
Yeah, now
because that's what that was all about.
At first, I thought, oh, obviously she's a changeling.
Hmm.
When they made it so that she's not a changeling, I'm okay. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. I'm coming into this with a lot of negativity, and I need to try not to be so negative. I did end up going back and watching that final episode that she was in The Next Generation to get a fresh new perspective, just to go, okay, how would Picard feel? How would he actually react? And I believe that this is a warranted reaction. I think the way they left it off, his emotion and her emotion, they just match up. So I don't have a problem with that. There are just a lot of other little things, a lot of things with the plot. The last episode, Riker is poo-pooing all these ideas that people have. Like, we can use this and do this to get us out. Well, what about this? We can't do that. That's too much of a risk. That's a problem with the writers, who they're trying to manufacture a problem, or they're trying to get them out of a certain area, and they just betray a character.
You know, I look at it differently. I look at it that has way more to do with his trouble at home, with his wife and Deanna, and what he's trying to do to sort of, like, at the end of his life, he doesn't want to be the one that took the risk that cost everybody their life. He was going to play it safe, even if it meant they all died. And I really think that's what I picked up from what was going on. And I think it was reinforced when he's talking to her. And, you know, and I don't remember exactly what he said, but Deanna says, I haven't heard you say that in so long.
I still think that's out of character.
Okay. And I will defer to somebody who's much more of an expert than I, but I thought it helped this story. It made it work. It went well. And I'm still struggling with the whole idea that we now have these changelings. And I guess because I don't know all of the history of Star Trek, I don't know if this is a common adversary that they've faced.
It was a common adversary in Deep Space Nine. And they were basically the villains, the arch enemies in Deep Space Nine. So they caused this quadrant-wide war.
Right.
So they are one of the biggest enemies. So I understand. A lot of people that I have seen don't like the mixing of the Star Treks. I don't have a problem with that. We're right now seeing that these changelings are more than just changelings. They're, as Crusher said, they are a new...
They're evolving.
Yeah, it's the next step of evolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At first I thought, oh, well, maybe they're taking over people's bodies and changing them, but they've now grown internal organs, so they're not completely dissolved.
Well, and we're seeing that even with Vadic when, you know, she cuts off her hand and then all of a sudden it's almost like...
Yeah, that was weird.
It's a little bit of a changeling, and now we've got long-distance space communications through your changeling's hand. It's just different, and I...
Where's the science in that?
I don't know.
I need science.
But they did. And then there's obviously something going really wrong with Jack because he's like quasi... involved, or he's quasi-infected. I don't know what you
want
to call it.
That's where I thought the infection was coming from. I was thinking maybe one of them infected him. I'm confused. He's being taken over by some entity.
Well, I think he is, but he's been giving glimpses of the future, but we're seeing it from one perspective where it's like, oh, this looks like it's a horrible situation and it's going to be a bad thing. And in reality,
it's a good entity, by the way.
It's actually they're giving him premonitions of what's going to happen because he's having to go in and kill these changelings. And even, you know, his mom says, did you know that they were all changelings? Or how did you know? And he goes, I didn't, but somehow he did. And so, maybe he didn't. He was just fighting for his life. I don't know.
I think it's some other changeling. It's another changeling, one of the old changelings, and they're communicating with him long distance. And
they're trying to save humanity and space because they're fighting against the bad changelings. Is that it?
Yeah. I think somehow he got infected with goo and he knows some stuff.
Wait, wasn't that an Ant-Man? Drink the goo. Drink the goo.
Goo.
Yeah, remember? That's how they got to talk and they understood each other. They drank the goo in Ant-Man and Quantumania.
I like the idea of putting a fish in your ear.
I like that too. That was a great idea. You know, Douglas Adams was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He knew how to do it. So, all right. Well, stick around after this. We're going to talk a little bit of animated stuff. We're going to talk Bad Batch, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the Nerd Show. It's Scott and Micah holding down the fort here this week for you, and I'm a little bit confused on Micah's music selection this week, but hey, it's not bad. It's just different. It's a little out there.
Well, it's normal bumper music. Because Presidents of the United States of America was a 90s band.
I appreciate Presidents of the United States of America, but I'm just saying that I don't recall the last time you've used that for bumper music.
I don't know. Maybe I haven't used it in a while.
It could be it. So
this is a very big folder of bumper music.
It definitely is. That folder is huge. So, well, last segment, we're going to talk about Bad Batch. We have been discussing how in The Mandalorian, the episodes continue to get better. We continue to get deeper into the stories. And we're not getting deeper into the Star Wars story and the Bad Batch this week, but we are getting more into the characters. We're getting more into the individuals that we're dealing with and what's going on with them. So I'm actually enjoying it. And I appreciate tremendously the amount of just development that we're seeing with the characters. And I think it's interesting what's going on with the Bad Batch and with Omega and where they're coming into a fatherly mindset.
Can I disagree with you?
Yes.
As soon as I saw that, what's her name character, the pirate or the freedom fighter, whatever they're calling her,
mm-hmm.
the Wanda Sykes character.
Yes. Uh-huh.
As soon as I saw that she was going to be in it, I'm like, And then when I saw that, it's not screwdriver guy, it's glasses, it's goggles. As soon as I saw that goggles and she were kind of like making eyes on one another, I'm like, oh, no, we don't need this. We don't need this. I don't need a love story in this. Come on.
Well,
I want more Star Wars action. Maybe I'm just being a grumpy old man. Get off my lawn.
I think there's an opportunity in every story where you can start to develop feelings for someone
for
in that
her
environment. But who knows? Why you got to be so grumpy? Oh, wait, it's Micah. Never mind.
Yeah, it's me.
I forgot.
I don't know.
You.
Maybe it's just because like Wanda Sykes is the same character in every show. She's just the same.
Well, but
her character is Wanda Sykes.
She really is, and I think the nuance of her voice makes that difficult for her to kick. But I think the character that she's playing and this character has grown to appreciate and has grown to feel that there's something going on with the Bad Batch and, more importantly, with Omega. And Omega needs a little bit more stability, and she has the opportunity by taking him to this sanctuary.
Which
to make that
is
happen.
Not very stable.
No, it's not. And that is my only argument with the show, is that why is it that we always have to drop all of our characters into a situation that within the first 24 hours they have to rescue the entire planet or they have to rescue themselves? I just... Yeah.
Yeah. I was just wondering exactly when is the Empire going to show up? Oh, it's not the Empire, but it's like a tidal wave or whatever.
It's a sea surge. And I think I would have appreciated it way more had it been they'd sat down, they'd started to feel comfortable, and they were having conflicts about whether or not they were going to stay. And that had taken days or weeks, and they were seeing Omega starting to develop a friendship with this girl and realizing that there was a benefit, but then there was push to, and even a call, like, you know, maybe they get something from Rex or somebody else that says, hey, there's a problem, we really need your help. And they're thinking, yeah, we probably need to go do this. And then all of a sudden, then that happens. I think that for me would have felt more realistic than the whole concept of, hey, we just got here 12 hours ago, and thanks for showing us all the beauty here. And, oh, now we're going to have a sea surge that hasn't happened in 30 or 40 years.
How about what if they got a distress call about the sea surge, and then they went down to the planet, that saved everybody?
Been, that
decided,
would have been great, too.
Let's live there.
Yeah. That actually, I really like that idea, Mike. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a great approach where – and maybe even, you know, the pirate character that Wanda Sykes plays is going, you know, she's having a little bit of difficulty trying to figure out an internal conflict of going, do I expose these people to the clones and the Bad Batch and Omega because it is her sanctuary and that's where they're going? Or do I not? And she's struggling. And then all of a sudden this call goes out that, you know, their alarm system went off and they're going to get a sea surge and they really could use some help and it's a SOS and they show up and they're already planning on going that way. I would have liked that.
So was this a good episode, bad episode, or meh?
I think it was somewhere between meh and good.
I'm going to go with meh. I didn't think it was a bad episode, right, but it was...
Fair enough. Okay.
It was worth watching.
All right. Well, that's all the time we got for this week. Hopefully, we've covered enough of the different elements of nerddom that we try and cover on a regular basis, but don't do a great job. But we talked about cards, and we talked about board games, and we talked about TV shows, and we talked about animation.
Maybe next week we'll talk about a movie.
Maybe we will. And in the meantime, folks, nerdians, you stay nerdy.